Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Friday, December the 20th. We are a few days away from Christmas, so we decided to put together our Christmas show tonight. And who else but our good friend Frank Burke up in Wisconsin is going to be joining us in a minute. We're going to talk about this wonderful season of Christmas and how to get through it. I mean, sometimes the challenges are incredible. I was talking to a young couple last night who have a couple of kids. And they were telling me how stressful this season can get. I remember that when we had kids, it can be pretty stressful, you know, putting things together, hiding the gifts. So tonight, Frank and I are going to, we're not going to solve all the problems, but we're going to maybe share some of our ideas as to how to make this Christmas a little bit more interesting, and also how to keep politics away from Christmas. I mean, we're in such a difficult political moment right now where the passions are so high that, you know, people are losing friendships over all of this. And what a sad thing that would be to lose a friend over politics. So let me say Merry Christmas and hello to our good friend Frank Burke. How are you, Frank?
Well, thank you, Sylvia. Merry Christmas to you and to our audience.
Thank you so much. Well, it's a little damp here. It's 50 degrees, actually, but it feels a little chillier than that because of the fact that it's going to rain, and it's just that chilly. You get that chilly feeling, you know, when you go outside. What's it like up there?
Well, it's actually there's some residual snow on the ground. All the roads are clear. All the sidewalks are clear. It's going fast. It's in the 20s. It'll be in the 30s and up to 40. But like you, it's damp because of the melting snow, and there's a bit of a wind, and it looks like we are not going to have a white Christmas. Supposedly, we may even have mixed precipitation or rain, which would get rid of the rest of the snow on Christmas.
Well, here are some numbers that you might understand. Chance of rain, 20%, humidity, 63%, and it feels like 45%. So
yeah.
those are the numbers that I'm looking at my iPhone, and so that's the temperature here. It's 50 with those three numbers. Well, is Wisconsin getting ready for Christmas? As I recall living up there, there were lots of lights, and people, particularly in the country, would put lights, you know, in their trees outside, and it was actually a lot of fun to drive around this time of year.
Yes,
not so much in the city, but getting out to some of the areas, Frank.
Very much so. In fact, a number of the towns, or even when I was in Milwaukee, there's an area in Milwaukee called Candyland Lane, and all the houses are just incredibly decorated, and the people do it on purpose. If you drive through it, you'll find people with collection boxes, and you put in a little money, and it goes to charity. So it's very good that way. But, yeah, everybody has lights on. What we do, our house is very classical. It's a Greek Revival house, so we have electric candles in the windows, and then one little pine tree is covered with blue and white lights. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that's kind of what we do. It's kind of restrained. But people around here do put lights out. They put decorations out. The lady across the street from us is a very talented decorator. She doesn't understand how talented she is, but I do.
Right.
Their house is always gorgeous.
Yeah. One of the things that I do remember, here in Dallas, we also have a lot of, you know, homes with lights and all of that. In fact, there's a whole section of a town called Farmers Branch where you can drive through, and it's like all these amazing decorations that they have in trees and Christmas lights and all of that. So that is really nice, night to see. There's some very long lines, of course, because you sit in your car and you watch it. So it's like people are just, obviously they slow down considerably, so the lines are extremely long, but it's you know, it's worth it this time of year. Well, Frank, Christmas for me at least brings a lot of childhood memories, and even as an adult, I have a lot of memories. And one of the things I've always been able to do at Christmas time is to walk away from whatever tensions or whatever pressures there may be. I mean, you never completely walk away, I understand that, but at least I've been able to, as much as I can, to get away and enjoy the holiday. And this year in particular, with the political tensions being what they are in the country, I mean, you're almost afraid of going out to a table with friends or family. You're almost afraid to say the wrong thing that just triggers a comment one way or the other about President Trump. I mean, it's like you're really afraid of saying anything, because I mean, people are losing friendships over this, and that's very sad when politics gets to the point that it's costing you a friend, Frank.
Well, it is, but you know, really, Silvio, if that was the case, they weren't much of a friend.
Right, well, that's
true. I have to say,
yes,
people are at this time of year, increasingly, you know, the fact that as you get older, I was talking to a cousin of mine, just a lovely lady, on the phone this afternoon, and she lost 5 friends this year. And I think back to some of what happened this year. Her son was struck by a terrible illness. Thank God he seems to be getting over it. I've had problems where some of my friends have been, very sick and still are. And at Christmas, it's a hard time, because even if you escape that, your heart is with the people you know. And for a lot of people, too, who have, if I can put it this way, who have lost their way in terms of faith, in terms of sensitivity, who have just, you know, gone overboard on politics or whatever, it's an incredibly tense time.
Yeah.
Because they're feeling the ambivalence of, hey, I'd love to be back where I was when I was a child, but I didn't hate Trump then, but I do now, you know.
Right.
Some ridiculous thing like that.
Yes, but with me, you know, I've always been, I guess I've always been the kind of person that has always been able to separate. In other words, if I have a friend who is, let's say, for a liberal, let's say, or an anti-Trump person,
yes,
I'm always able to say, okay, come on, let's not go there. Let's have a glass of wine, you know, and talk about something
exactly.
else. But there are people who simply cannot let go of this stuff. And I mean, I personally, I don't know if I lost a friend. Who knows? We may reconnect in the future. I sure hope so. But I mean, I had it out with one fellow this year, and it just, you know, it you know, he just, you know, said, I'm never going to talk to you again. Well, he hasn't talked to me since, and it's been a few months, so maybe he meant it. But I think it was just the kind of thing that I felt he was being unfair, but, you know, he felt he wasn't. But anyway, I mean, it's the kind of thing that it's happening quite a bit. And I mean, they're even, you know, telling people don't bring up politics during the, you know, during the holiday table dinner or whatever. Just don't bring up politics. But to be honest with you, I never brought up politics that much at the dinner table, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. I was never the kind that brought up politics. I was more likely to talk about funny family stories. Or remember my dad, for example, especially since he passed away. Or I was more, you know, likely, I was even more likely to bring up a baseball story or sports story than I would politics, because I never felt that, to me, politics was something you kind of said, okay, that's it. It stops at the door, and we don't bring it to the dinner table with friends and family, Frank.
Right. And I would agree with you. Of course, when we were young, we tended to, you know, my family was more homogeneous. It was a different world. There was no need to talk about politics because everybody kind of was on the same wavelength. But these days, I think for many people, Silvio, as the world has become more secular, politics has become more a religion to them. And it's taken the place of what religion was. And some of them, a great number of them, in fact, too many really, become religious fanatics. They become political
right.
fanatics.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of the self-righteousness that was not a good thing in religion. But
mm-hmm.
you and I will remember some people who felt that they were religious and they were always judging other people, and
mm-hmm.
they knew they were on the wavelength with God, and
right.
what they said, they heard His voice, and He
right.
told them what to do, and they were crazy.
Right, right.
But
and
the
He
people,
told them
people,
He told them that their friend didn't know what he was talking about. You know,
that's
God,
right.
I mean, God, yeah, I mean, God really kind of, I know, and there were people like that. It's funny, but I always found, okay, I'm going to say something that may be untrue, but at least in my experience, it's been true. I always found that when people, like some of the more Christian denominations that are, you know, not the Catholic faith so much, but some of the
right.
Christian denominations where I thought that they would be, you know, a lot stricter and stuff like that. For example, if you were having a glass of wine, they would look at you like, you know, you're not supposed to drink alcohol, that kind of
right.
thing. And I always found that uncomfortable. But I, as I said before, I always had the congenial personality to say, okay, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the Yankees or whatever. And
right.
I was able to always, at least for the time being, switch the conversation, Frank. But the point you made about the secular society is a good one. I'd like you to develop that more because I think you're right. I think you see that with climate change people. And I think you clearly see that with many liberals. And there was a time, I guess, where a bunch of people could get together, Democrats or Republicans, but there was a lot more common ground. You know, for example, 20 or 25 years ago, if you got together with a bunch of friends, even liberals, for example, would oppose abortion. Or
mm-hmm.
would be more traditional in their marriage views. But that's not the case now. And if you bring up any of those subjects, I mean, that's a good way to get into a fight, Frank.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, you have to, when you look at some of these people and their fanatical beliefs, it's just the fact that they really don't have anything else. You know, I see it in a lot of ways. There's an abandonment of a lot of humanity, if you will. I'll give you an example. Very often when I'm talking with friends or just people I know, business associates, we'll be talking about the holidays or so. Well, what are you doing for the holidays? Well, we're going to be home, or we're going to my son's, or we're doing that. And I'll say, well, what's Santa bringing? Well, you know, he's not bringing anything. My wife and I, anything we want, we just go and get. Well, all right, this may lead us into talking about the commercialism of Christmas, which is too bad that it goes too far. But the bottom line is that a gift like that is not commercial. It's special. It's not something you need and you go get. It's the idea that, hey, I love my wife. I want to think of something that she would really like that she wouldn't get on her own. And I want to give it to her on that special day so that over the years she'll look back, and as we do, we look back on gifts we got and say, hey, you gave me that for my birthday. You gave me that for Christmas years ago.
That's right. That's right. No, that's exactly right. A lot of Christmas presents, if you will, or a lot of things in your life you associate with a Christmas gift. You know, I've told the story of when I was a little boy and our grandfather gave us those little horses, you know,
yes.
the sticks with a horse head. And to me, that's always been a very fond memory of my growing up. Another one Frank, from my childhood. But you were going to talk about the commercialization of Christmas. Were you finished with that, or did you want to say something
much.
Else?
Pretty much. I think we all know about it. We know that, you know, it starts too early, and it's not a thing of sensitivity. It's just about get, you know, whatever.
Right. No, but it does start too early because I for some crazy reason, it's become the entire month of December, which, I mean, people are, you know, let's forget about the Christmas music. That starts, I think, the day after Thanksgiving. But
right.
I mean, everywhere you look, it's Christmas this and Christmas that, the television ads and all of that. And I'm not opposed to capitalism. You know, people need to make money. That's fine. But I see Christmas as more than just giving somebody a gift. To me, Christmas is the birth of Christ, and that's where it all starts. To me, that's what Christmas is. We celebrate the birth of Christ. Everything else is nice, but the birth of Christ is the essential thing that we celebrate, and if we simply put up a tree and give each other gifts, well, that's not really Christmas for me. I'm not going to judge other people, but that's not really Christmas for me. To me, Christmas is the birth of Christ. That's why we go to the midnight mass. That's why we go to mass on the 25th, either the night before or on the 25th. So I associate Christmas with the birth of Christ. That's what it means to me. Everything else, well, I could literally do without. If all of a sudden, you know, Christmas was the 24th and the 25th and you couldn't do anything else other than have a family meal, go to the midnight mass, and remember the birth of Christ. If that I would be perfectly content with that, Frank.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, it's very true. I mean, it means a lot. If you go back to our primitive selves, many theologians believe that Christ may have been born about the end of May, but that Christmas was set when it is, because it is very close to the longest night of the year. And even in primitive times, people celebrated then and kind of prayed that the days would get longer, because if summer didn't come back, if spring didn't come back, there's no way they could grow their food. So it is the feast of light, the light that shines in the darkness. And I think, you know, if you think about that in terms of the weather and the winter and the days getting shorter, it's just a wonderful break. And after the holidays, after Christmas, that's when in places like Wisconsin and Canada and upstate New York, that's when the winter gets very long.
Right. that's when at least a white Christmas has a romantic sound to it. A white 10th of February doesn't really. A white 20th of January really doesn't. You know, it's just another day with snow. And I remember our first year in the United States, you know, it was so interesting because everybody kept talking about a white Christmas, how they wanted to have a white Christmas. And I kept kind of saying to myself, well, what does that mean, you know, a white Christmas? And, of course, I knew they were talking about snow. Obviously, I knew they were talking about snow. But I said, well, what does it mean? I mean, well, why is that such an important deal? And, you know, the best explanation the other kids could give me was, well, I heard that from my mom or I heard that from my dad, you know.
And well, then from Bing Crosby,
that was the next thing I was going to say, that all of a sudden one day I'm watching this movie called White Christmas and I go, gee, I wonder if that's where it all started. Maybe it did. I don't know. But for me, at least, the whole idea of a white Christmas seems so different, you know, coming here our first year, accustomed more to a tropical Christmas, you know, where, you know, it may have been 75 degrees on Christmas Day and people actually went swimming. You know, people actually went swimming on Christmas Day it was humidity and very hot sometimes on Christmas. So for me, that, you know, that's a Christmas memory that I'll always have, you know, coming here and having so much to learn about Christmas, you know, the Christmas celebrated in the United States that we didn't know anything about, Frank.
Right. Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. And it's, how can I say, you're learning about it and in effect cherishing part of it is and this will lead into what I'm going to talk about a bit later, but this is part of your becoming truly American. It's the sharing of this whole wide experience that that we have, where some of us celebrate Christmas, as you say, around the pool, and others in the little cabin trying to keep warm.
That's right. Well, in some parts of the country, of course, you know, San Diego, places like that, Miami,
yeah.
You know, the people, you know, do celebrate Christmas. And there may be a swimming pool involved in a lot of the parts of the world, Brazil, South America. I mean, this is the beginning. I mean, the 21st of December is actually the beginning of their summer in South America. So they sing they have a good time and enjoy Christmas from that perspective. But you know, again, my message to people, Frank, this year is try to keep politics out of your dinner table, because, you know, once you get down that road, I mean, if you get into an argument with somebody at the dinner table, you spoil it for everybody else, Frank, because a lot of the other people really don't want to hear it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you know somebody who is liable to go off like that, I would say be very careful of the number of drinks you pour for them.
That's right. Yeah, if people start doing Adam Schiff imitations after a few drinks, you might want to you know, order them an Uber or something to get home, because
right.
You know, people start doing their Adam Schiff, you know, imitations at the dinner table. That might not be. It may be provocative. I'll put it that way. To say the least. Let's take a break, and then when we come back, we have your annual Christmas contribution. So let's
do
that.
Great.
Thank
you.
We'll take a little break. Music of my good friend Carlos Geddes. If you check his schedule, he's actually playing in quite a few places during the Christmas holidays, and he has great background music while you're having dinner, and he's just a fantastic fellow to listen to, especially when you're enjoying a glass of wine or something like that over the Christmas season. Our friend Frank Burke. Frank, I'm trying to figure out how many of these we've done. I'm going to say at least five. Yeah, at least five that we've done on Christmas time. And what we try to do is reminisce and have a good time and set the table for the season. But you always contribute something wonderful. So I'm going to turn the microphone over to you right now, Frank. You're on.
Well, thank you. Just a little word of introduction, and kind of as we were talking about White Christmas, I think for anybody who comes to the United States and learns its traditions, whether they come from Cuba, whether they come from Ireland or Asia or wherever, you learn about the pioneer tradition and the concept of the log cabin. And Christmas on the frontier is something that's fixed in the American psyche. Unfortunately, many of the people who went out and lived in log cabins, I did build one, so I can tell you it's very dark on a dark night when you're in a log cabin. But many of the people who built them were not terribly literate people. Few of them were. And they wrote beautiful memoirs. Many were not. And so the generation that came along at the beginning of the 20th century and had the ability to talk to the ones, to the old-timers, about their memoirs, very often were able to capture the spirit of what the frontier was like in a more literate and poetic manner. What I'm going to read to you is a little excerpt by Bess Streeter Aldrich, who was born in 1881. And it's about Christmas Eve, and it's called Suzanne's Own Night. Christmas Eve of 1855 in the Martins' big log and frame house, there at the edge of the grove which swept up from the timberland along Iowa's Red Cedar River. All the girls wore flannel nightgowns, flannel nightcaps, and flannel bed socks, and rather perilously, with much squealing, carried up the ladders each night pieces of hot soapstone wrapped in fragments of clean, worn rags. They climbed into the feather beds, pulled other feather-stuffed ticks and several pierced comforts over them, and if their clattering tongues ceased and their exuberant spirits calmed down sufficiently soon, were not long in going soundly to sleep. Christmas Eve was Suzanne's own night. It had been for her. Sitting on the floor with her back to the edge of the fireplace, arms around her knees while the light played over the room, she had that feeling that always came with a special night. She could not put into words which satisfied her, but in some vague way knew it was magic, the night for which one lived all year. In the summer, with mourning doves and bouncing beds, the wild grapevine swings, and the long walks in the timber, you forgot entirely the feeling that this night could bring. To think of it gave you no emotion whatever. In the early fall, you began to remember it. By November, it became a bright light toward which you walked. And now, tonight, you could not think with one bit of excitement how much you liked the summer things. Yes, it was magic. The snow piled against the window was not like other snows. The wind in the chimney was not like other winds. If you scratched a frosted place out of which to look, you saw that the snow-packed prairie to the north was a white country in which no other person lived. That the snow-packed timberland to the south was a white woods forever silent. It was as though there were no human at all in any direction but your own family. Christmas Eve was a white light that drew a magic circle around the members of your own family to hem them all in and fasten them together. Everyone was laughing and talking there in front of the fire where the long knitted stockings were hung. Soon now they would all get up and go after the funny-shaped packages hidden in drawers and under beds and put them in the stockings. Suzanne had something for everyone, a little pincushion fitted into a river shell for each girl, a fancy box for Ma with tiny shells fastened thick on it with glue made from old Rosie's hoofs, handkerchiefs hemmed from an outgrown petticoat for Pa, Phineas, and Henry. A corncob doll for, she still felt undecided whether or not it would be quite nice to put a corncob doll in Lucy's stocking. The pale yellow light from the tallow candles on the shelf and the bright reddish light from the wood logs made all the faces stand out from the darkness beyond them. If you listened above the din of the talking, you could hear the wind in the chimney turn into music. Christmas Eve was a night of song that wrapped itself about you like a shawl, but it warmed more than your body. It warmed your heart, filled it too with melody that would last forever. Even though you grew up and found that you could never quite bring back the magic feeling of this night, the melody would stay in your heart always, a song for all the years. And there we have it.
There you have it. Excellent. Excellent as always, Frank. What year was it, the 1853, you said?
1855.
So this would have been a Christmas night in the middle of the 19th century, let's say.
Right, in Iowa.
In the prairie, as they used to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was interesting to me was listening to the reading. Well, a couple of things really struck me. The first one is none of those gifts that they gave each other, they went out to buy. You understand
mm-hmm.
what I mean? It was like they didn't go shopping for any of this. Everything
right.
was everything was homemade or handmade, and it came from, like you were saying, from somebody's, you know, from this dress they made another gift or whatever. So everything was part of something that was already in the family. I thought that was kind of a neat thing. And the other thing that I didn't hear, Frank, unless I missed it, was there was no reference to Santa Claus. So, I mean,
no.
the idea was that the gifts were brought to you or given to you by family members. I just think that's beautiful, Frank. The message that in all of that is just, it almost, you know, you kind of wish we could go back to that.
Yes.
Honestly, I mean, look, I'm not going to say that I want to start making gifts for people because I have no talent for anything like that. But I wouldn't mind.
You'd be surprised, Sylvia.
Yeah, you may be surprised. That's right, if I had to. But, you know, the idea that you would make things for, I mean, the family would make this person would make that for the other person. I think that's absolutely beautiful, Frank.
Oh, it is. It is. And when you think about the fact that these people were living in rather desperate circumstances, and if you ever have been, and we reconstructed a log cabin on a farm out in western Wisconsin, a duplicate of the one that was there originally. We found period logs and we did it. And I got to tell you, this was no place. We learned a tremendous amount about living on the frontier. And I got to tell you, it was no place to be. There was no way to insulate the blame thing. They would hang blankets over the doors and the windows. And the darkness when you walked outside at night, if there was no moon, was tremendous. And you think about people living there, and they're alone, and it's cold, and you hear the wind blowing, and it's the middle of the night, and suddenly there's a knock on the door.
Mm.
Who is it? A stranger? Somebody who needs help? A nut with an axe? Ready
right.
to kill you? I mean, you know,
yeah.
there are any number of answers to that question.
And they had to keep the place warm with firewood, I guess, just with fire.
Yeah.
There had to be a good supply of firewood. I mean, we today use the fireplace more for pleasure than anything else. I mean, we certainly don't use it to keep the house warm. At least we don't.
No.
And you know, most people today, it's more of a, as I say, a visible thing, something you look at because it makes you feel, you know, whatever you feel, romantic or whatever when you look at it. But those people had to actually keep those places warm. So I'm beginning to think, you know, when I think of how much firewood I go through just for pleasure, and we don't use it every night, think of what it must have been like for those people. They had to literally use that to stay warm.
Oh,
so
yeah,
there was probably, there had to be a fire inside that place going on all the time, Frank.
Of course, and let me tell you what my biggest discovery was, as somebody whom, as you well know, likes to cook.
Mm-hmm.
There was one pot on the stove, and you just kept throwing other things into that pot. You didn't have multi-course meals. You didn't have, well, what's the vegetable tonight? What's the meat? You'd go out and you'd take some of the deer meat that you'd smoked or pork or whatever and put it in the pot and throw in vegetables that you'd preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And because everyone, including the woman of the house, was working, there was no time to fool around. You just kept eating the same. Well, it would differ over time, but
mm-hmm.
you'd have the same stew out of that pot. It never came off the stove.
Right, and everybody was busy 24 hours a day. I mean, you were basically busy surviving.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that was the name of the game, was surviving. You know, today we're, you know, we say, well, let's have dinner tonight. Let's, you know, have the fireplace on for just sheer, you know, feeling. But that was not the case back then. When you were reading your wonderful reading, it reminded me of the Little House on the Prairie one time had a had a show about a bad winter up in the prairie. I think they were in Iowa or Wisconsin, I think.
They're in Wisconsin initially, and then they went to Missouri,
Exactly. And they had one incident where there was a horribly bad winter, and they had to rescue people and all of that. And I look at these people and I go, you know, what an amazing, I'll put it this way. They must have really loved freedom if they were willing to go through all of that to be free. You understand what I mean? It's like they came here from Europe. They came here. They had no guarantees other than, you know, you could work and make a living and have freedom. And yet all they had to endure, so these people must have really wanted to be free, to put up with all of that. I don't know. It's just amazing, Frank.
It is, very definitely. And yet, with all of that, there was time to think of Christmas and what it meant and the family and making the little gifts, taking the time, you know, doing it surreptitiously so they wouldn't see, and making the gifts for the people and celebrating. You know, you'd get together at someone's house and someone would play a fiddle and people would dance. And it was that kind of thing. But the closeness between neighbors, the closeness between friends, even if you had some disagreements, hey, when, you know, the Indians came over the hill something else came, or you had the flood. Those were forgotten pretty blame quickly.
That's right. Yeah, you put up with your neighbor real fast when you need him to defend you against whatever is attacking you. Well, Frank, I want to thank you so much for that wonderful story and for being a part of our 2019 Christmas show. And as always, I send you a warm embrace from Texas to you and your family. And I hope you have a great day. And we'll reconnect again after the first of the year. I have not forgotten about our rock and roll series, but there's been so many other things going on. I think you know that there's been a lot of stuff going on
in
the politics.
You know, that may mean it's time to just forget impeachments and politics.
Right,
and
start
rocking.
Well, that's it. Let's do a little Chuck Berry sometime in the new year. That would be kind of cool. But we'll definitely plan to do that. But again, my thanks to you. Happy Merry Christmas to you and to your family. And I hope 2020 is a wonderful year. And I think in 2020 I'm going to get up to Wisconsin finally, because we have a high school reunion. So we'll have a chance to finally get together and have that glass of wine by that fireplace you keep telling me about.
That will be great. And I'll even take you down to the log cabin if you like.
Yes, I'll go down there and I'll understand why Lincoln became Lincoln.
Right. Well, Sylvia, I want to return that wonderful embrace from Wisconsin to you, your family, and to all those listening to us. And the best wishes for a marvelous holiday season, a blessed one, and likewise a blessed New Year. And as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
That's right. That's right. That's another great tradition of mine. Watching that movie, the black and white version. That's the one.
Of course.
That I like. That's right. That's the one that I like. Well, good night, Frank, and thank you for your time. And well, we know for sure we're going to do Thanksgiving and Christmas in 2020. So start planning.
God willing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good night, Frank, and Merry Christmas to Frank and to his family and everybody else. We're going to save this particular podcast and put it up there so you can hear it during the holidays. Good night, everybody. Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you later.